beef.
Yo, what is up? I know it's been a while, but I'm finally back. I know some of you may wonder what I've been doing, but I mean, if you follow me on Facebook or any type of social media, you know what I've really been up to. You see the hat, you see the shirt. I've been coaching. It's taking up a lot of my time, but my plan is to come back. I'm starting you off with a banger of an episode as in my comeback. In this episode, you're going to get to hear from and meet somebody that's near and dear to me, that's become a very close friend of mine. I mean, he's got a lot to his story. And to be honest with you, even this episode isn't going to cover everything that we could cover. I joked with him not long ago and told him that, man, we could have a 10-part episode or 10-part series just of what you're like, what you've gone through in your life, and people would be begging me for more. So without further ado, here's my episode, 177, with Patrick McGee. All right, I'm here with Pat. What's up, man?
What up now, man?
Not too much, man. We've been talking about doing this podcast really since you came over. Finally bringing it back. You kind of helped convince me to bring it back. So here we are. So, I mean, I'm just going to hop right into it because we've been trying to get this done for the last couple of days and we ain't been able to get the time going. But coaching with you the last, 2 years now, I mean, man, bus rides and everything. Like, I heard a lot of stories from Pat McGee. And It's funny because I told you, we were sitting there talking a couple times and I was like, man, we could do a 10-part series on your life and people would just keep asking me for more. So, I mean, we're going to hop right into it. Like, what was it like growing up in the rough area that you grew up in?
Man, well, I came from the little suburb right outside Chicago called Rochester, Illinois. You know, it was, every day was a struggle, straight, you know what I mean? So, I was 5, 6 years old. I was doing what 14, 15-year-olds was doing at 5 and 6, so. Every day was a struggle out there, but you know, it made me stronger today and prepared me for the life that I, you know, didn't imagine that I had. But the situation that I'm in today, when the way the streets have turned, you know, I've seen both sides of it. Chicago, you know, Chicago's not a place where you can just, you know, it's just not a freelance place. I'm just putting it like that. Louisville is definitely different, but the way it's transitioning now, everywhere it's the same.
So, I mean, growing up in that area and having to deal with all that stuff, like, what got you into the game of basketball?
Man, it's funny you said, Lef. I've been playing basketball since I was 4 years old, man. People don't know, like, when they say put the work in, Lef, I was 5 years old getting forced to shoot on the barn and make jump shots. Like, true facts to you. Like, I was 5 years old being forced to make jump shots.
So growing up in an area, where was a barn at? Like, did you live in, I guess, a rural area outside of Chicago, or where did you even find a barn?
We lived in the suburbs, and my granny, I was always fortunate, and my grandmother, she's always took us in and sheltered us, rest in peace or so, but she sheltered us from Chicago to her. So we had a house, and it had, like, a barn in the back. It had a lot of land, but it had a barn. We never did nothing with it. Like, we didn't have any animals, anything. So my uncle put a crate on it, and that's how we played basketball.
So who was it that actually got you into the game of basketball?
And my uncle Lee Lampley got me into his ball, then basketball. My mama put the ball in my hand, but my uncle showed me everything I knew, learned about it, made me love it. He treated me like I was high school when I was elementary school.
It's funny because as I was mentioning, when we'd be on those bus rides, you always mention stories about your uncle, Lee Lampley, right? Isn't that what you said his name is?
Okay.
For those that don't know, talk some about him. Like, what, maybe, like, tell a story about him, or, you know, give people an idea of what he was. And then not only that, like, what did you take from his game that you attributed to yours to make you a better player?
Well, Lef, I never forget, you know what I mean? Me and my uncle, we talked a lot about the game as I was coming up as a kid. His best friend was Anton Walker. He wanted to go play at Kentucky, so It was a time, I don't remember, I can't give you the exact date, time, but I know that Rick Pitino came up to Chicago and my uncle had just went crazy on Chicago team. That was a powerhouse, and he offered him a scholarship. And the most memorable thing I remember, everything that tops everything is I remember my uncle was a McDonald's American and I wore the shorts. And that just made me fall in love with the game from that point on. I used to walk around the house with his game shorts on like I was a McDonald's American.
So, I mean, at that point in time, there really wasn't a school bigger than that, but was there any other big schools that came there to recruit your uncle?
I mean, Illinois was over our house every day. Kansas was there. Ohio State was there. He could have went to any school he wanted to. He ended up going to UConn, Florida, leading the nation, averaging 37.2. But he just couldn't get the ACC part of it right. But I seen every big coach there was back then in my granny's living room.
So I'm guessing at that point that was Roy Williams at Kansas.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I can't even remember who Illinois' coach was at that time. But I mean, if you saw big name coaches, I'm sure you saw. Obviously, you said Rick Pitino, did Denny Crum come up there, or Nolan Richardson, or any guys like that?
I don't remember Louisville being on the, when Antoine signed to Kentucky, it was all, everything was Kentucky from that part on.
So. Having that time frame there and everything seemingly going well on the surface, what ended up sparking you having to move to the city of Louisville?
My granny just got us out of the area, man. It was so rough. Like I said, I lost so many cousins and friends and family. It just, every day was just a test. Like, it was just every day was a fight. Every day was a fight, man. Like, it was seriously like this is back when games was, they was just coming around the surface, but they still was heavy at the same time. So if you didn't fall in love with the basketball, you was gonna fall in love with anything else in the streets, and it was right there, easy access to get involved and see it.
So, do you remember the day that you had to move? Like, what was, explain that feeling of, okay, I grew up here. Well, you were what, 12 years old, I think you told me. Like, as a 12-year-old, like, what did you feel when your granny's like, all right, we're moving and we're going to Louisville?
I never forget it, left. So I actually was a fifth grader. My cousin was a fourth grader. Rest in peace with Dion. We just lost. Like, this is the craziest part about it. So we played for our elementary school. It's called Concord Elementary. And we made it to the Elite 18. And we just, the Elite 8. And we just lost. So we come home. As soon as we walk through the door, we mad about the game. Like, we are mad about the game. My granny doesn't want to hear none of that. As soon as we come in the door, get the stuff ready. We moving. We moving because we got an hour to get all our stuff ready. We packed all our stuff. We put us in a van. Next thing I know, we was in Louisville, Kentucky.
So where did y'all originally move to in Louisville?
We moved to Newburgh. I've been in Newburgh for 22 years. Left from the time I got out the van, I moved in Newburgh to right now, 2024.
So when you first were pulling into the city, I mean, obviously you're like, okay, this is a decent sized city, but coming from Chicago, like what were your thoughts? Like, man, these dudes probably don't wear no shoes. Like, it was it country or had you already been to Louisville before, or was that the first time?
So we didn't even actually know we was going left. When she put us in the van, she just told us, get in here, set up, and sit down and sit back and ride. So as we started going, we didn't know where we was coming to. So when we coming, we seeing horses and cows, So then once we got here, we called them back home, and, they was telling us that this was a bluegrass state. So we was like, no, there ain't no bluegrass down here, but they got good green grass. Because in Chicago, you don't have front yards or back yards. You just don't have what you have here. So it's just a little bit different.
So coming from Chicago, I mean, obviously you talked about the grass and everything, but outside of that, like, how did it compare to coming from Chicago to here?
Ah, man, I'm be honest with you, Les, it was like we moved to Beverly Hills. Like, we came apartments and the areas that was really not that good. So we moved to Kentucky. It was just like, I'm gonna be honest with you, it felt like we was moving to Hollywood.
So being 12, I mean, I guess that's about middle school age. What school did you start at?
I started at Newburgh Middle School. So when I first got the van, I went to Newburgh Middle School. I went there for a week and a half, and then they opened up more traditional middle school. So they took me from Newburgh and sent me to Moore. And that's when the history began, right there. I went 6-12 and more.
So, I mean, did you even have enough time at Newburgh to even like determine whether you even liked it there, or were you happy to move to Moore?
I mean, I was happy to leave. So I can actually tell you a story about that. I went on a field trip. I was a new kid on the block. So I went on a field trip. They had basketball tryouts. I actually came back to the tryout late, and Officer Bell was a basketball coach at that time. He gave me an alternate role because I didn't get to make it in tryouts. But he was like, "You good enough. You'll be an alternate. You know, somebody get hurt, grades go down, we'll pull you up." Week later, they put us in the cafeteria and told he was going to Moore. I was the happiest kid in there. Everybody else was mad. I didn't care, didn't know. I was the happiest kid in the cafeteria.
So I got to ask you this, because working in the building for 2 years, you know, at with what we do now, like what's the biggest differences, not just in the building, but like what you see basketball wise, like student wise, like how much different, or what are the biggest differences from when you went there?
It's crazy that you say that because I was just talking to a former friend of mine, played on the team, Jazz first. He was just talking about this today. It's just, I don't know. Just back then, it was, you know, we was trying our best to make it out of the situation we was in. It was just that cutthroat. Everybody wanted to make it. Nowadays, you know, it's just, I'm not gonna say basketball ain't changed, man. One thing for sure, basketball hasn't changed. The kids have changed, the game has changed, but basketball has not changed. You know what I mean? And with the way we're going now and more, with the access that they have now, I'm gonna tell you now, man, if I know guys that was better than me, and if they had this same stuff they have right now, I don't think me and you would be on the phone right now.
Yeah. So let's move to the basketball part of it. So early on, I mean, you played with arguably one of the best players in the last 25 to 30 years in the city of Louisville, Carlos Hurt. Like, first off, what was it like being around not only someone with that much talent, but someone who was also a McDonald's All-American? I know you already mentioned your uncle was, but now like you're a little bit of age, you kind of understand what that really means. Like, what was it like being around somebody with that talent?
Man, it made you understand that you gotta work. It showed me that nothing's gonna be given to you on a nightly basis. I've seen Carlos get harassed, go through so much of just being a high profile player. He had a target on his back from the time he stepped on Morris campus. His work ethic was tremendous. He stayed in the gym, one of the best shooters I ever played against. Like, I've never seen nobody put up at the volleyball like line like him. I never seen nobody could take you to the post as a point guard like him. His IQ was just un out the door. Like, it's one of the best players I ever played against in my life.
So
Hands down.
I want to hear the first time that you were like, 'cause of course when you as a kid it just happens this way. When you hear like, oh yeah, this guy's a McDonald's All-American, like you're like, man, this dude ain't really like that. When was the first time that Pat McGee saw him and was like, oh yeah, that dude's really like that?
And so we had open gym. We had open gym in the summer before we even start practicing. They call everybody in the gym. Everybody come. You play. You need to come to the gym. We have a workout. All the guys they call open gym. I come in open gym. He didn't lose a game. I'm talking about Petey Brown, Chuck Sweeney. I'm talking about the guys that I look up to. He didn't lose a game. And he did not have no good players. He had players, but he didn't have no starter on his team, and he didn't lose a game.
So that was when you were like, oh yeah, this dude's certified.
And he was talking stuff. He didn't even know none of it. Talking stuff from the first time we met him.
So not only did you play with, you know, a legend in Carlos Hurt, but you played for a legend in Larry Miller. Like, coming from your background in basketball, how much different was his coaching style? Like, for a player like you coming from Chicago, like, was it something you were already used to because of the workout you had with your uncle, or was it something that was like polar opposite of what you were used to in a coach?
I was already prepared, left that you had to play hard. That's one thing my uncle taught me at a young age when we was playing elementary YMCA basketball. He never, ever let us not play hard. It's just one thing that we had to do. When we was playing him, we had to play hard. You might not have a chance to win, but you have to play hard. But coming from that was already in my mindset. Coach Miller just brought the fundamentals to the game and made me understand a lot more that it wasn't just about me, it was about the team. You know, as a senior, I was the only senior on my team. I was the only senior on my team that year. Steve worked and played, but he didn't finish the year out with me. So I played my whole senior year with underclass.
So you say that, like, would you say that that's the biggest part of your game that he helped with is learning the team aspect?
That and more of just making me mature and growing up. See, I was still young, and I still wanted to do immature stuff. And he grabbed a hold to me. He held me accountable from day one. He held me accountable my freshman year all the way up to me graduating. I'm gonna be honest with you, I don't think I graduate half the year without Larry Nance.
So in our conversations that we've had in the past, like you mentioned that you lived with Larry, for a time of your high school career, like what happened to, like, I know you mentioned you were immature. Like what happened to get you to that point to where he was like, all right, I'm taking you with me, you're living with me.
Not too many people know it left. So, like I told you, when I first moved here, I moved to Newberry. It's a good and bad neighborhood. You don't take what comes with it. So, I had some friends. I was young at the time. I was immature, wanted to hang out. I did some, silly stuff. So, one day I was in the locker room, and I don't even remember what I did, but I know how the story went. I don't know if we lost the game, we won the game, but I said something in the locker room. All I remember is Coach Miller come out and say, "Call your mama. You're going to live with me." And when I called my mama, I wouldn't live with him from that point on for the next 3 years of my life.
So, I mean, at that point, you're a what, sophomore in high school. So you're probably what, 15 years old, 14, 15. Like, what is it like living with not only an older white dude, but just somebody that's totally opposite of you outside of the game of basketball? Like, what was the everyday life of living with Larry Miller?
And see, that's what everybody else thought too, but you wouldn't believe it. I had so much fun with him just on the, it was basketball, it was love, it was whatever I wanted, whatever I needed. He didn't let me go hang out, but he would take me to go to the gym. Like, we went to the YMCA every day. Like, it was just more of a, he made me lock into what I really love in the basketball, and he made me leave everything else in the rear view. And I'm so thankful for that.
So as you mentioned, you were the only senior on your on the team your senior year. So going into your senior year, you were pretty highly touted. Like you were in the running for region player of the year. Like did you have any D1 offers at that time? And if so, like what D1 offers did you have?
My biggest offer came from Minnesota, Clem Haskins. Larry had Coach Miller had got set out for a year for some violation or something they tried to say we did. So Coach Evans stepped up, and he was a coach, and he was a Minnesota grad. He was on the staff with Clem Haskins, and he had him come down to a game. He actually came, watched, liked me. Like I told my guys, like I told you, grades was a big issue for me back then. I got 13 on my ACT. It scared me. I never took it again. So I took the JUCO route and went to California. But Minnesota was the highest. It was the highest offer I got, but I just couldn't capitalize because I wasn't focused in the classroom.
So is your test score what eventually kept you from going to the Division One level?
At the end of the day, my senior year, Coach Miller had Murray, Coach Miller, he had a couple OVCs. It was just as my grade. That's why I try to tell my kids this day, you got to be more than just a basketball player. You got to be a student athlete. Anybody can shoot a ball because you read a book.
Yeah. So you already mentioned it. So what was the name of the JUCO that you went to, and where did you say that it was?
Imperial Valley College, right outside of San Diego. I was out there for the first semester, started my first 7 games. Actually got homesick, came home Christmas break and never went back. Biggest mistake of my life. You just never know how much you miss until it's gone.
So when you came back, was there any other places that you tried to play? Was there any other schools that you tried out for or anything? Or did you just pretty much give up the game of basketball?
I came back, left, and I got straight to working. I went to a ball didn't work out. I couldn't get my transcript right. Coach Gray wanted me to come and enroll in there, but I couldn't get my transcript situation right. And then Simmons had opened up, I think about 4 or 5 years later, and I went to their first actual workout that they had. I actually made the team. Well, this is true facts. Nobody noticed. I actually made the team, went through the cut, went through the training and everything. and just didn't go. I had a got a job. I had a son, so I couldn't pursue it.
So after you came back and you got into the workforce, like how long after that did you actually coach for the first time?
So after I came back home, I was working. I didn't coach basketball. So my son Deshaun was 4 years old. I took him to the lighthouse. And I wanted to sign him up for basketball. 6 months, he was the tallest kid in the gym. He was 4 years old. He was not supposed to play until he was five. So they let him play because he was my son. So the guy, I got running the league. But he's like, "You gonna coach the team?" I'm like, "Not gonna coach the team. I don't know how to coach basketball." He's like, "You know how to play basketball. You gonna coach basketball?" I'm like, "Okay, then whatever. I help you out." Went to the next practice. He left me in there with the kids, and the rest is history from that point on.
So moving on from there, like I know you end up starting an AAU team. How long after that Lighthouse thing did you start your AAU team?
So after the Lighthouse, me and Sean actually went down to the Potter House League, and we played with Freddie at Westfield Express, and it was a church league. And I met Derek Miller. I've been knowing him my whole life, and we actually played him in the championship. He was like, "Pat, you coach basketball?" I was like, "Derek, it's my first year. I don't know what I'm really doing. I'm just over here because he made me do it. I'm just trying to get Sean to play basketball." And he was like, "You know what? Next year, you're going to come with me with Who's Next." And next year, we went with Who's Next, and we got on the surface. Third grade, we took our first tournament. People don't know that we took our first tournament when Sean was in third grade with the St. Louis and won a championship.
Yeah, I know
I had
you've talked about it that with that team that they got a lot of notoriety, not just locally, but nationally. What do you think the secret was to building such a powerhouse in a team that really was your first experience coaching?
It was we over me over there. It was that simple. If you ask any of them kids right now today, what did we the best stand for? Is we over me. And that's a motto that I'm always going to live by. If we all shine, you don't have to worry about me.
So coaching back then, I know you say that they got notoriety and you went up to St. Louis and won championships. Like what type of teams or what teams that people may know or players that did you all play against?
As we got going, Les, we made national runs. We didn't been from on the rankings, and when they were in the youth, they didn't play some of the toughest talent there is out there. I challenged them boys a lot when they were little to prepare them for the days like today. So they've been in big time events, big time tournaments. They've been in big time games. I remember I can go back to so many tournaments left and just go pound for pound where, they didn't play against top-notch kids that actually showed up. Did we win? No, but they played hard and fought.
So, I mean, having or winning like this and having the notoriety and stuff like that, it's not going to come with any slouches. So now I want you to name some of these kids that was on this team. Obviously Sean was on there, but some other names of people locally may know. Who are some of the kids that were on this team?
Man, you got Brandon Heath at Du Bois Chief. You got the Dog Chief at St. Nate. This is one that people do not know left, and I told people this back when they were kids and nobody believed me. Marlon Harmon is a two-sport star. The kid played basketball for me, the best defender, the best dog, and he is a man on the field. But I'm telling you right now, left, the boy can play basketball and football. Then you got Kalyon Barry. You got Noah. You got Zion at Trinity. You got TJ at New Albany. You have Will at Mill. You have Casey. You got Casey at Silver. Is it Silver Creek?
Silver Creek.
You got Silver Creek. I could keep going. I got Corn at Mill. We could keep going, left. It's just, I got a lot of
Who
kids.
was the other kid that you had that we watched New Albany play against?
You talk about Braylon Langley, 6'8" guy. We actually played. And it's the thing about that, Ralph. I can give you a little detail about that. We actually played. No, it's all true facts. We played him. So we played his team. He's about 6'3". I don't have a 6 foot kid on my team. So we play him. He come out looking at us on the eye test. He's like, "I'm gonna turn him up." We play him, we end up beating him back 20. So I'm talking to him after the game. I'm like, hey, kid, can I get your current information? I want to know if you can, travel with us. We don't have any bids. He gave me his dad's number. The rest is history. He starts playing with us from fifth grade all the way up. We actually made two runs with him. He is a good kid.
So after your AAU experience, you end up taking a job locally at Seneca or at Seneca High School, right? Were there any other coaching jobs that you had or that made you make that decision to go to high school level?
See, a lot of people don't know this, Left. I had a lot of coaching opportunities before I even took that one at Seneca. I didn't know that coaching was really my passion. I loved AAU, but it was one of my friends, Austin Floyd. So he knew how I was with the kids. So Sean was coming up on his seventh or eighth grade year. And we were just sitting there. He was like, Pat, you don't think it's time for you to get in high school? Like, Sean's going to need to get in the gym. Sean's going to need to get working. I think you should go try to help out these other kids and get Sean together. I'm not thinking taking it serious. So I call a guy and know, like, hey, man, I think I might be interested in coaching. He's like, man, Pat, don't play with me. I'm like, I'm dead serious. He called me over there. We have an interview. Long story short, he gave me the freshman team. Fall in love with that. Start helping him with JV. And then the rest is history.
So jumping into the high school ranks, like what was the biggest differences between, high school basketball, like school basketball and AAU?
It's a total difference. It is a big gap in between. I love AAU basketball. I love it. But it is the reason that the game is changing on a high school level. AAU basketball and high school basketball is not the same. I demand you play defense in high school games. You don't have to play defense in AAU games, just be honest with you. You don't have to. Teams are going to press you the whole game in the AAU game. You can't handle the press, the ball game's over. You might see a zone majority of a AAU game. Half these days, you're going to see a man zone, man. You're not just going to see the same actuality. And I feel like the kids have changed from AAU to half school. AAU is more like a fun, friendly. Then you get to half school and it's serious, but it's still that friendly involved. You know what I'm saying? When I
Yeah.
played, it was no, I wanted to be my brother. I wanted to be whoever. I didn't have no friends when I'm playing the game.
So like you, so I guess AAU is more like, hey, let me get my shine, you get your shine. It's almost like a glorified All-Star game.
That's what it feels like now, though.
So two summers ago, you decided to take the JV position at Moore. And that's where our paths crossed. Like, what was that feeling like coming back home after so many years being away, really? I know you came in and watched some of your stepdaughter's games, but like, what was it like coming back to coach on the sidelines that you once played for?
Man, it was a blessing. I'm not gonna lie to you. I never seen this in a million years. You could have never told me that I'd be back where it all started at coaching basketball, walking through the same hallways I walked through, same trouble that I got into. You could never tell me that this would be possible.
So I mean, it was weird, man. Like as soon as we met, like I told you the first day I met you, I was like, bro, you look exactly like your brother, because I had played against your brother in high school, and you were like, yeah, man, everybody says that, and I was like, and we kind of bonded pretty much as soon as you came over here because we thought the same. Like it was all about what the kids, like it was all about kids and how we could get them to the next level and what we had to do to help them get there. So. Let's go into last season. Last season was a roller coaster. We're not going to go into all the details because that's a podcast that could last for 4 to 5 hours. And to be honest with you, there's a lot of details in that that probably don't need to get out. But
Definitely. Let's speak on
at the
it.
end of the season, you were named interim head coach. And outside of all the feelings of the situation that led into that happening, like, what were your feelings on being named interim, or did everything happen so fast? Like you really didn't have a chance to even really think, like, man, this is crazy. Like I'm the head coach now.
I'm gonna be honest with you, if I still ain't had a chance to sit down and just soak it all in. Like it just came in a blitz and a blur. I still ain't even took it all in yet. Like it's unreal. You could never tell me I would be sitting here going through this, talking about this with you on the podcast. I never in a million years thought that this would be happening. So when it came upon last year, and the situation came upon and they threw it at me, I was wanting to take off running with it. I haven't got
Yeah.
to sit down and think about it, like even actually feel the feeling of what we just did. But everything happens for a reason. You can ask anybody. My Instagram name has been the same. I promise you, my Instagram name has been the same for the last 6 years, and that's God's plan. Everything's God's plan, if you ask me.
I mean, hell, to be honest with you, if seasons go by as fast as this last one did, I don't know if you'll ever really get to sit down and think about it. Like,
Yeah.
this had to be the fastest season that I've ever dealt with.
These 2 seasons have flew by, left. I'm not gonna lie to you. And now it's time to get on year three. So we're right back to the grind, baby.
So let's go back and talk about that. So you really hit the ground running whenever you took over. I wasn't allowed to be at the first game, but I got to watch it on FaceTime, and you beat the brakes off of Dawson that we lost to earlier in the year in the LIT. You ended up going 500 in your 6 games as a head coach in your first year. And a few weeks after the season, you were named a head coach. So I got two questions in this. When the season ended, like, did you think to yourself, like, yeah, I think I'm going to get the job? And if you did or didn't, like, why or why did you not? And then second, was that an emotional time knowing that you were given a chance? You felt you deserved at a place that held a special place in your heart already? Or that, again, like you said, it's too fast to even really think about that?
So I'm gonna be honest with you, left when the season ended and everything happened, they gave me an interim role. I was not for sure if I was gonna be coming back because I had already had a vision before I came that I was gonna be there. So everything was up in the air with me. I didn't know which way the ball was gonna turn. I didn't know if they was gonna just clear the whole situation what we had and just bring in a whole new. So I really was just, waiting and just, sitting back patiently waiting to see what was gonna happen. And then when I got the opportunity to show what I was capable of doing in those last 6 games, I knew I had to hit the ground running. I knew I had to make a mark and show everybody that we was made of. And I felt like we did a great job of that. Didn't come up where we wanted to, made it to the regional tournament, lost in the championship of the district. We did all the great things that we could do to get there to win. We just couldn't capitalize. And I actually felt like the boys came on playing hard those last 6 games. Because it's more of the confidence thing, left. I just feel like it
Oh,
was
yeah.
more of a confidence. With me and me and my guys, it's just I'm here for the confidence. Like I tell you every time, left, I can't tell them what to shoot the ball. I can't tell them, like, I can teach them how to play basketball, where to be, and what to do. I cannot make them do anything. You have to be a basketball player.
Yeah. So after you were named the coach, what was the first thing you wanted to make sure that you did as a coach?
The first thing I wanted to do, make sure that when I took over to him,
Yeah,
the
so I
team
mean,
was
we can
talking.
either go back to go when you took
I
over as
just
interim or head coach.
wanted to bring the more culture back. I just wanted to bring that culture back that when more pulls up, you see more of your schedule, that it's going to be a dog fight. They're going to give you everything they got. Win, lose, and draw, that they're going to give you everything they got. And I feel like the boys did that this year in the. You're in the 6 games. I feel like they did that. The year and the 12 games that we've been took over him left. I really believe that these boys have been playing their hardest and gave us everything they had. Came up short, but I really feel like they gave us everything they had.
I mean, one of the biggest things that I've noticed in our practices is how much you reference your old coaches. I've been around coaches that reference old players that they had, but never really like what they've learned. It's weird. Like, it seems like a lot of coaches nowadays are, have a lot of ego, and they'll say, what they've taught or who they've taught, but they never really give the flowers to people that really paved the way for them and taught them what they know. So saying that, we already spoke on Larry Miller, another one you brought back this year, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But what would you say are the two biggest things that you took from Coach Larry Miller and Coach Norton Fleming when you were playing that you wanted to make sure you instilled in your practices or your game plans or even like when during a game?
The little stuff. I'm gonna it's just it's you know sum it all up. The little stuff. That's what they preached to me when I was the same kid sitting at where they sit at. The little stuff matters. You might not think it matters, but the little stuff matters. Deflection matters. Diving on the floor matters. Being locked in into the game matters. Coming to school mentally prepared during the whole school day matters. Paying attention when we watching film matters. Like, the little stuff matters. That's one thing that I took from both of them that I it's a key It's definitely a key part of winning is the little things.
So this is kind of a fun question here, and I'm kind of interested to hear what your answer would be, and I'll think on it too when I ask you this. So you and I are students of the game. We talk pretty much nightly about games we watched or stuff like that. So if you, Pat McGee, had to say, this is my answer, who would you say your coaching style most like mirrors? They could be still coaching now, or they could be a retired coach or anything. Who would you say Pat McGee's coaching style is most like?
Well, I know I'm not 30 yet, but do I know who I want to be? Like I want myself. I'm trying to be a Rick Pitino guy. I'm full down hard Rick Pitino. I'm just putting it out there right now, man. I'm a 94 speed guy. Pick me up in learning from Rick Pitino. It works. I don't care what nobody says. You have to play defense, man to man pressure.
So you want my answer? I think you're a hybrid. I think you're a mixture, and it's just gonna be funny because it's gonna be the same thing. The first part, Nolan Richardson, because that 94 feet of pressure, like that's my first part. Your other half, Shaka Smart. That's my two mixtures there. The energy that Shaka coaches with on the sidelines, the way he's interacting with his players on the floor, and then the defensive acumen that Nolan Richardson brings, that's, I think you're a hybrid of those two together.
I like it, Ref. I like it. I definitely like it. I wasn't thinking that. I definitely like it, though. I definitely like it.
So you and I had multiple talks. As soon as you were given the head coaching job, and you were like, "Hey, I want you to stay with me," and I was like, "Man, I was just waiting for you to say the word. I wasn't going nowhere." But you and I had multiple talks about scheduling for this past year. Like, we both agreed that we want to play the most difficult schedule that we could possibly do. So, like, I know what my reasoning was, and I know we've talked about it. But like, what was your reasoning behind wanting to have the like? Because we've literally reached out to every team in the city that you can think of, every top team in the city. We had Woodford County on the schedule, which some people don't know, but we had to take them off because of some scheduling conflict. Like, there was teams on there that people don't realize that were on the schedule that we had to take off because of scheduling conflicts. What was your reasoning behind wanting to put your team through such a difficult schedule?
I'll be honest with you, Les. I got it from Larry Miller. I remember, I promise you, I remember one year, I don't remember what year, I was wondering, like, Coach Miller, why do we play all these hard teams? He was like, hey, to be the best, you got to play the best. I mean, Les, we want to be the best, we got to play the best. Like, it's not no in-between secret. We want to play the top of the seven. We want to play the top of the six. I'm not scared to play the top of the eight or the top of the fifth. It's just that's. We want to be there at the end of the day. We say we want to win regionals. These are teams going to be there. So why not figure it out and see where we at right now?
So do you think after, going through your first full season as a head coach and having that mindset, do you think that that helped?
Yes, sir. We don't win 17 games if we don't have the schedule that we had this year. We do not win 17 games if we do not have the schedule we have this year. Think about it. Our boys can battle Texas from day one.
Yeah.
We came out and played two top 25 teams right off the bat
Yeah.
and got our shit beat in. Then come back the next week and we get better.
Yeah.
It's all a process. You know what I mean? We just got to trust the process and stay locked into what we do.
I mean, if you think about it, we played, it was like 9 or 10 teams that either made the championship of their region, won the championship of the region, or something like that. Because we played Seneca, they lost the Trinity championship. We played Evangel and Fairdale, who were in the championship. We beat Harrison County. We beat or we lost to Or we beat Simon Kenton. Both of them were in the championships of their region. Harrison County, I don't know if you saw the video, but they lost on the same type of shot that they lost us in. Like, we at one point, I think we played like 15 top 25 teams in the state or something. Like, it that were top 25 at some point or when we played them, which is insane. Like, to really think about, because when we put the schedule together, like, that was what we wanted to do, but there were some teams we didn't realize were going to end up being what they were.
No, and actually made us better for the long haul, left. We went into We got hot at the end of the season. Actually, went 7-8. Am I correct? Did we go
We
seven
won
to
set.
eight?
We won seven in a row.
Okay, so you know we're coming into going into March, and that's exactly where we need to be at. You know what I mean? So I feel like this year was a great opportunity for our young guys. I hate it didn't end like we wanted to for our seniors, but I feel like we really got better as a team as a whole this year.
So this is a question I've actually asked you. I think I asked you after we lost the district championship, because you and I, like, not a lot of people know this, but he and I, after every game, when we get back to the school, we sit outside in the courtyard for probably 15, 20 minutes. If we win, we talk about what the great things we did and what we could improve on. If we lost, it's pretty much just down in the dumps, and there's just people calling Pat the whole time, and we're just like, man, we don't really want to talk to these people. But we do this every time. But I know I asked you this in one of the times we were sitting out there. Your first full season's over. Is this as easy as you thought it was going to be? Is it harder? Like what, when you went into this, like, is this what you expected? Is it easier or is it harder?
No, definitely not what I expected going into a left. Like I tell you all the time, like I talk to you more than I talk to anybody. The hardest part is not coaching basketball, ref. This is what people don't understand. I work in the building. I'm there from 6:30 until, let's say, 8 o'clock on a good night. I'm going home at that 8 o'clock. The hardest part is off of the basketball court. Like, it's not a, I'm like, it's the hard part is nothing to do with basketball. The hardest part is in the classroom from 7:40 to 2:20. You're dealing with teams. They're kids still. You know what I mean? They're
Yeah.
growing up. They're immature. Remember when I told you I had somebody grab me when I was too immature and save me from falling? Because at the same time, ref, I seen some people fall that he couldn't save. Like I seen this with my own two eyes. So I know what can happen. So like you were saying, like it's not hard coaching basketball. The hardest part is off of the court. You know, and coming from where we at it more. We have this stigma that it's such a bad school, but like me and you know, we both been working there for the last 2 years, and more is not the same more. I keep telling everybody, more is not the same more back from 1998 to 2004 when I was there. It's not the same more. It's 2024. More has upgraded this. They have upgraded the game. They've upgraded stuff that
Yeah.
I've seen at this stuff that was never ever thought about. I never thought it would be at more. It's at more now.
Yeah, like when I came into it, I didn't go to public school. Like, I went to, like, those that know, like, I went to a private Christian school, you know what I mean? So, like, I didn't know everything that was going to be happening and everything like that. Like, I didn't know what I was going into. I just knew, hey, I got to do this job so that I can coach basketball, because this is what I want to do. I'm getting a job in the building so I can be here all day, so then I can coach basketball after school's over with. Like, I didn't know what I was getting into. If it wouldn't have been for you being on the same floor as me when I first got there, like, and I would have never picked up on some of the things I picked up on. But all right, so you already said one of the things, and this may be your same answer, and that's fine, but like, as you know, you're looking at yourself as Coach Patrick McGee. What is your biggest goal as a coach?
My biggest goal is the coach left.
Yes.
I want to get the state. I want to get the rep and bring one home, baby. That's what my goal is. Now, at the end of the day, if that happens, I would love it. But my main goal, ref, is to make sure that these boys get to college free. First of all, so that's the main goal. I want every one of my kids to get to college free if that's what they want to do. And I want them to get there and take advantage of the free education. Because the ball's going to stop dribbling, ref. I'm gonna tell you like this. Nobody told me this, and I wish they would have, but nobody told me when I was growing up, you're not going to make it to the NBA, son. So you need to think about what job you want to work when you get older. I was never told that, ref. I was never, ever told that as a kid. Only thing I knew was that I was going to make it to the NBA. You know how hard it is to make it to the NBA?
It's not really talked about enough. It's not really, it's like less than 1%.
So that's why I tell my boys all the time, Les, you know, I tell you, you know it's a true fact. Basketball is gonna stop bouncing. What do you want to do when this ball stops?
Yeah.
It's what you want to do. like you can use the basketball to help you father your life. And that's one thing that I didn't get. That's the only thing that I feel like we didn't talk about when I was coming up in that. We didn't talk about that, Les. It was either NBA or for all of us.
Yeah. So let's move past that now, because I want to pick your brain on something, because this is something that you and I haven't even really spoken on. And you ain't got to go too much in depth, because there's obviously stuff that you don't want to tell people. You know what I mean? What I want you to give your way too early prediction for the team next season.
I mean, I'm gonna be honest with you, huh? You know me, Les, and you've been around me for the last my life, yo. You know me. It's championship or bust with me, baby.
Championship or bust. District or region?
Regional.
Okay. So I like that.
Championship or bust. I'm championship or bust, baby. I'm so locked in with my guys. I feel like we had a great year. We got better. We know what it feels like to get there. Now it's time just to grind and get over the hump. I feel like that, honestly.
So I wanted to talk something personally with you here, I'm willing to talk about this, because I'm pretty transparent with things. So with one of the things that happened last year, again, I'm not going to go into detail. I had spoken to you and told you, like, hey, man, I'm going to go seek therapy. And I had asked you a question one day. I called you when it was the day that I decided that I needed to do that. Like, in the two years we've known each other, you've dealt with more stuff than any person I've ever met. Like, being, like, going through all of those things, like, what is your motivation to keep pushing forward? Like, what do you use as far as, like, motivation to keep pushing forward? Or, I mean, I'm sure there are days that are difficult, but, like, what keeps you pushing forward?
To be honest with you, Left, the day I lost my brother, it really changed me. You know what I mean? It changed me fucking good. Cause, you know, coming from where I'm coming from, Left, you know, losing somebody close to you like that, you know what I mean? It's either, you just turn two ways. You gonna go downhill, you gonna go up. You know what I mean? So I didn't let it pull me down. It was times where, you know, it got rough. I'm not gonna say a lot to you. You know, I remember times where I was stay in the room for months and months, just couldn't believe it, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, I was coaching Sean's in the AU team, and we actually made a national run. And I had to really sit back and think about it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what would my brother want me to do? You know, as I sat there and thought about it, it was like, you know, it was just like he kept on telling me, like, hey, man, you need to take them boys to Florida. You need to take them to Florida. So, you know, that's what I did. I just got in the gym with them, locked in, kept my head down, you know, television. You know, it's plenty of times where I didn't even lift my head up. I'd just be in the gym, you know, I'd be talking, but I kept my head down. And if it wasn't for them kids, I'm gonna be honest with you, like, if it wasn't for them group of kids right there, I don't know where I'd be at right now today.
So this is the final question before we go to rapid fire. Rapid fire is the fun part of the episode. So, we're almost done here. But this is a two-part question, but I'm interested to hear what you say. Because you and I talk all the time, like you said. You say you talk to me pretty much more than anybody. And I ask you questions, and I say, hey, man, this is kind of like what it'd be like if we did a podcast. So here's my podcast-type question. And it's a two-part question. First, if you could go back in time and you could tell young Patrick McGee – anything in the world, what would you tell him?
Stay in school.
Stay in school. All right. Second, what do you tell kids nowadays, either kids that you come in contact in the neighborhood, because you still do a lot of big things in the neighborhood with Newburgh Days, or, you know, helping with anything down there, or coaching at more, or helping with AAU teams? What is something nowadays that you – that there may be a kid that you see yourself in, like – what do you tell that kid to make sure that they don't go down the same path that you did, or make some of the mistakes that you did to get to where they need to go and maybe make that next step that you didn't make?
Yeah, stay focused and keep working. Main two things. You have to stay focused and keep working. You can never stop working. You can never lose focus. Once you do, it's over with. You have to stay focused and keep working. And it's all going to pay out in the long run. I promise you. I promise you.
All right, so like I said, this is rapid fire questions. Are you familiar with rapid fire is? Like I ask you a question, you say the first thing that comes to your mind. This is my favorite part of it because I like to hear what people say. All right, so I'm actually going to add a part to this. So what was your favorite pregame meal as a player and what's your favorite pregame meal now being a coach?
My favorite pregame meal was a Fazoli breadstick. My favorite pregame meal as a coach is, I guess, a Qdoba.
Okay. All right. Now, speaking of Qdoba, which one are you gonna choose? Pizza or tacos?
Taco.
Wings or burgers?
Green, well done.
Now, if you're going wings and we're going bone in, you going drums or you going flats?
What?
French fries or tater tots?
Tater tots.
What's your favorite movie of all time?
Oh man, I got so many of them. I'm gonna say Hardball.
Okay. That's a tough one right there. That's tough to watch every time you watch it. All right. Favorite musical artist all time and then currently.
I'm Jay-Z.
So what about one of the current artists?
Right now, today, Lil Baby.
Favorite album all time.
Reasonable doubt.
This is a good one. This is my favorite question to ask everybody. All right. What is your biggest fear? It could be something simple like I'm afraid of spiders, or it could be something that's deep. It just depends on which way you want to take it.
Dying.
Dying. Okay. What's your favorite restaurant in the city of Louisville?
Ooh. If we gotta be a sit down, it can't be any restaurant.
It could be, hey man, if I was a billionaire, I don't care. I would go ahead and eat here every day.
I'll be probably.
I always try solid. Favorite flavor of ice cream?
Vanilla.
Who's your favorite basketball player of all time? Who's your favorite football player of all time?
Michael Jordan, Barry Sanders.
Who's just your favorite athlete of all time? It doesn't matter what sport.
I gotta say, I got so many left. I ain't gonna say like you. My favorite athlete of all have to say T.O.
Okay. Best player you ever coached against in AAU and best player you ever coached against now as a high school coach.
Oh man, the best player I ever coached against in AAU, I would have to say is. Shit, I done played against a tough player, bro. I'm gonna be honest with you. The best kid I ever played against, and this is no lie, no knock on nobody, Tyron Stokes, man.
So he's the toughest one you ever had to coach against in AAU?
And Tyron's the real deal, man.
So now that you've been a head coach in high school, who's the best player you've coached against? Just the high school ranks. Not forget the AAU part.
Just the hat that we played against, hell.
I mean, I knew that one was kind of a softball question, but I had to
Sorry,
ask.
you already know, hey, don't be kidding, got 29 on us in one half.
So this one, I'm gonna tell you to exclude Carlos Hurt. Okay. And this is the last question. So who is the best player you played against in high school? And then who is the best player you played against after high school? Dirt bowl, men's leagues, anything like that. So first high school, and then the second part is after.
The best player I played against in high school. Are you talking about five types that we played against our team? Or
I
are you
mean, if
talking
you
about
think
my?
it. Like when you played for Moore, who was somebody you all played against that you were like, man, that's the best player I've ever played against?
Man, there was so many dogs back there left. That's a hard one right there. I ain't gonna lie to you. That's a hard. There's so many dogs back then. I'm gonna have to say Johnny Mathis. I remember he sent us home, and I feel sick about that.
Who did he play for? Male, okay. Now let's say Dirt Bowl, Men's League. Who's the best player you played against in that?
Who's the best player I played in? Let me see. I have to say Russ. OG Russ in Victory Park.
Okay. Well, man, that's all the questions I got for you today, man. So I appreciate you finally getting to sit down. And I mean, this ain't gonna be the only one. We got a lot of things coming with me bringing this back. Like, there's a lot of things coming that a lot of people don't realize we're gonna do. I mean, I've told you before, man, but I appreciate you not just doing this, but just bringing me along in the journey, man. Like, I feel like I'm just a part of just another chapter in that book that you already started writing, 7, 8 years ago. You know what I'm saying? I'm just happy to be a part of that book.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. This is the start of that. We just getting started, man. This is the start,
Absolutely.
right?
Absolutely. But again, man, I appreciate you joining. Like I said, we're gonna do it again sometime soon, man, but I appreciate it.
We're gonna link, man. I'm gonna get to you, all right?
All right.
I do, guys.